The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. This is a show where we help you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better driving school as well. As always, I am your splendid host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because we are continuing our venture into Season 7 and into all things road safety for driving instructors. And of course, Season 7 is sponsored by Bright Coaching. To find out more about Bright Coaching, including more about their professional diploma for driving instructors, head over to brightcoaching.net and make sure you sign up for the newsletter while you're there as well. But on today's episode, I am talking to James Gibson of Road Safety GB. Now, when I was outlining this series, Road Safety GB was well up towards the top of the list of people or organizations that I wanted to come on because, you know, realistically, they are the biggest road safety organization in the UK, well, in the GB. So delighted to have James on today. And we're talking all things events, so road safety events, driving instructor events, as well as looking at the aging driver course that they recently ran, including the way ADI is attended and how that could potentially impact future courses. And we're talking all things road safety GB in general, looking at how we as driving instructors can better support them, but also what they have to offer us. So another really good episode for you to get stuck into. But just before you do, I want to ask you to go and check out the Instructor Podcast website. That's www.theinstructorpodcast.com. Over there, you'll find links to listen to the show in a variety of different ways, including on YouTube. And you'll find links to all our other shows, such as the 1 Minute Driving Instructor Tips podcast. Plus, you'll find links and information on all the individual episodes, as well as, of course, the Instructor Podcast Premium, where you can find out everything you need to know, including how to sign up for a 1 week's free trial. But for now, let's get stuck into the show. Today on the Instructor Podcast, I am joined by the Executive Director of Road Safety GB, James Gibson. How are we doing, James?
Hello, Terry. I'm good. I'm good, thank you.
Good stuff. Well, I'm delighted to have you on board today because we first bumped into each other at the ICE Live event all around. Well, that's a good start. My mind's gone completely blank. What's it all around? What's it called?
Virtual reality and
virtual reality. I'm going to leave that in the podcast, yeah, because that's amused me. All around virtual reality. That's when I first bumped into you. So I think I might actually like to ask you a couple of questions around that to begin with. So I know that event was a little while ago, but I'm just wondering what your thoughts are around that event, the virtual reality aspect in particular.
I think for that event, the great thing with it is you've got a whole bunch of experts there. And you've got the chance to actually try some of that technology firsthand. So that's a really good thing with that. As you probably know, it's linked with the guys from First Car. So First Car and ICE Live go together. First Car have actually got another event coming up a bit later this month in May. And that's Young Driver Focus. So that's going to be down in London, down at the RAC Club. I think it's the 22nd of May.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on like these events in general, the events, the conferences? You just mentioned ICE Live, the Young Driver Focus. I know you've, Road Safety GB, you've got an event coming up in November. What are your thoughts on the events overall?
I think what we're finding is that people do want to get together. Obviously, since lockdown, what has happened, loads of people, as we know, are doing more and more meetings online. So things like the Road Safety GB National Conference, which, as you say, that's in November, 6th and 7th of November. We're going to be in the center of the country in Birmingham. Things like that are a great way of people getting together. What we find is some organizations actually want to use it as a bit as a team getaway. So at National Conference, we'll have a number of people from one organization. They'll attend, they'll do their networking, but they'll also have that team aspect as part of the event. So yeah, really important. I can talk more about conference perhaps a bit in a bit, but for us, it's a really big part of what Road Safety GB does.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. You know, coming out of all the lockdown and stuff, everything was sort of online based, and I think I let that roll on for too long. And it's only recently I've kind of really made the effort. Right, I'm going to have to actually get out and see people now. But
It does make a difference, doesn't it? I mean, we're recording this over Zoom, but and it's fine. You know, I enjoy doing this stuff over Zoom, but it does make a difference when you meet people in person, I think, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, there are loads of advantages with using online, whether it's Zoom or Teams or whatever your platform is. There's loads of advantages. We don't have to travel. We can, you know, I'll have several meetings in a day, and I can be, going to meetings that I wouldn't physically be able to do. I could be down on the south coast, and then I can be in a meeting in the northwest in the afternoon. That face to face work. So, online allows me to do that. But what online doesn't give sometimes, and especially in bigger meetings, is that chance for networking or the extra stuff you seem to miss out on, the little bits of conversation you might have over a cup of coffee. And, you know, it's all of that side. So I think it's really important that we do have these events through the year where people can come together and you bring that back. You bring that face-to-face element back.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, we're going to come on and talk about the aging drivers course that you guys run. Talk about that shortly. But it's like when we do those online courses, when we take a break, the idea is then we take a break and run away. We disappear from everyone and go get a cup of tea. But when we do them in person, we take a break from the event and then go and socialize. I find the whole thing fascinating. But that's not what we came here to talk about today. But I felt like it was an interesting little bit to start off with, because I mentioned there the agent driving drivers course, and this was something you spoke to me about when we met at the Ice Live event, and this was a free course put on by Road Safety GB for driving instructors specifically to help us learn how to work with aging drivers. So I'm just interested initially, what feedback have you had about that course from ADIs?
Well, the feedback's been brilliant. I mean, to set the scene, Road Safety GB has an arm called the Academy. So it's the Road Safety GB Academy. And we run training courses really aimed at road safety professionals, whether they're from local authority or police or fire or, you know, others within the sector. But part of that was we had a course aimed specifically at ADIs. And this was about, as you say, aging drivers. We've got an aging population, and it was trying to arm ADIs with the skills and knowledge to help them in that particular sector. What we did is approach the Road Safety Trust and managed to secure funding. And then what that allowed us to do is to offer places free of charge. So instead of having to make a charge, we were able to offer that training free of charge, and we had 300 places available, and the feedback has been really positive. I suppose the thing that I would like to see happen is for ADIs to be well used, and for example, local authorities or others that are running older driver programs, for them to use ADIs that have done this training. And then it will really help to try and improve standards for older driver interventions.
So you said that you had to request funding for this course. What was it about this course that made you want to almost target the aging driver aspect?
Well, as we know, we've got an aging population. So the casualty statistics are leading us down to the fact that we are going to, as a sector, we're going to have to do more work. We're going to have to really invest time and energy into encouraging safe driving for life. You've heard that phrase before, but it's something that we're going to have to do. And the skill base needs to be enhanced. So again, we've got lots of ADIs would be quite well versed in working with older drivers, but we want to make sure that those skills are there, and that ADIs are equipped with how to best deal with older drivers. The point of trying to get the funding was that we had funding previously, and we saw a bigger uptake in this course when we'd got funding attached to it. When ADIs were having to pay for the training, we still had numbers coming through, but not in the same volume. So it was about trying to get a good spread of ADIs across the country, and being able to offer it on a free of charge basis allowed us to do that.
I want to come back to the ADIs aspect in a second, but as you said, we have got this aging population. Are people driving older? Are people driving older than they used to, essentially, because we're living longer?
Yes, they are. I mean, again, there'll be stats out there around the number of license holders. You know, again, people will have seen, there's been TV shows, hasn't there, about, you know, 90-year-old drivers or 100-year-old drivers. There's a whole raft of work going on. There's something called the Older Driver Task Force. That particular group have recognized one of the requirements is that ADIs should be trained. And that's really where this course comes from. What we want is for people to continue driving for as long as they can and as safely as they can. There obviously comes a point for some drivers where, you know, they've reached the end of their driving career. If I reflect, say, within my family, I've got two people within my family that are at opposite ends of the driving spectrum. So if you imagine a U shape in your mind, I've got my nephew that is on one side of the U shape. So he's in his late teens, starting his driving career. And then on the other side, I've got my father-in-law that is perhaps at the other end of the U shape. 85, going to be 86, and I'm somewhere probably at the bottom of that U shape. So in my 50s, and I'm at the bottom of that U shape. And if you think about it, we've got that huge driving career in between. And I suppose there are, you know, again, I choose a U shape perhaps for a few reasons, thinking about not necessarily thinking about my own situation with my nephew and my father-in-law, but generally, if we look at casualty stats, we would see a higher rate at the younger end, and then also a higher rate at the older end, especially if you think about casualty stats per mile driven, for example. But I mean, there's lots of things that you can do. You can if you're an older driver, there are lots of things that you can do yourself, and these are, as you'll be aware, coping mechanisms really that you can put in place. So again, it's logical things like fact that you know you wouldn't necessarily choose to drive at night, you wouldn't choose to drive at really busy times. You know, if you're retired, you can plan your day, choose to go at other times. And again, it's about if ADIs are involved in that process, it's about ADIs imparting that knowledge. You know, and again, it's a lot of it is common sense, but it's about a mindset and getting people to take those points on board.
It's interesting, the example you use there, because I'm currently teaching my nephew to drive, and he lives opposite my dad. So whenever I drop him off home, he often goes around to see my dad. So my nephew is 18, my dad's 68. And then the next lesson, he'll come to the car and he'll say, "I fell out with my granddad because I was telling him what you'd said about this," and he disagreed. And so, you know, there is definitely a difference in opinion between the younger generation and the older generation. So,
absolutely. And you've got, as you say, the example you've got there, it's 50 years of driving, isn't it? Between, yeah. You know, and yeah, there's going to be differences and different approaches. A lot of young people can learn an awful lot from the older generation, and I suppose vice versa. A lot of older people could learn a lot from youngsters as well.
Exactly. I want to ask you about ADIs then, because I know we've spoke before and you spoke about like the place have been filled, the course, at least for the time being, is finished. But you were telling me that a lot of ADIs took up the spot and then didn't bother turning up to the sessions. From my perspective, because I'm a working ADI, I cannot get my head around that for several reasons. One being that obviously we've got this free course that we can attend. So whether you sign up to do it or not, if you're agreed to do it, you should be turning up. But on the flip side of that, this is what we deal with every day. You know, if I get a student and go and turn up to their house and they don't come out to their house, I know how that feels. So to sign up to this course and then just not bother to turn up, I think is disrespectful and rude, if I'm being honest with you. So can you just talk to me a little bit about that, about the, you know, the number of ADIs that haven't turned up and how that impacts you that have put on this course?
Yeah, I mean, we, as I say, we've applied to the Road Safety Trust for the funding, part of that grant criteria. And there's quite, you know, understandably a reasonable process to go through. We've got to make sure that we've got sufficient numbers on the course. With ADIs that don't turn up, obviously we have those that let us know something crops up. You know, life's busy for us all, isn't it? You know, you could have a emergency dental appointment or something goes wrong at home, and you know, and again, there'll be a reason why you're not able to come to the training. And there's a great many ADIs have let us know about that. But also there's a lot that, as you say, just haven't turned up. The way that we've got around that is to try and overfill the courses. So in reality, what we've ended up with is it's not brilliant, if I'm honest. It's about a 60% turn up rate. So we've had to overfill the courses to then make sure we've got sufficient ADIs with us. We're on track to do that. We've got the last handful of courses. They're all signed up, and we're on track to do that. So, got every faith that we'll get to that 300 points. But yeah, I can't, you know, again, I don't know. Perhaps there are other reasons why people have signed up and then not come forward. We've done lots of things that are possible for us to do. So again, making sure we offer the reminders, making sure we send an acknowledgement back that they're booked onto the course, giving them the details, sending a further reminder. One thing we haven't done, we haven't put anything too onerous in there. So we haven't put collecting people's credit card details or charging them for a no-show fee. It's something that we had considered, and again, if I was running the project again, maybe it's something that we should think about and do. I mean, again, as a professional, I'm not sure what most ADIs do. If you get a student that doesn't, you know, if you get a no-show, what do you do, Terry, with that?
I mean, you're right, it's going to be different every student. My take on it is, if I turn up and if someone doesn't turn up to the lesson, generally they're going to get charged for that lesson. There's always going to be the odd exception. You know, if someone's in hospital, then I'm not going to charge them. But, you know, generally they will be charged for that lesson. So for me, it's just frustrating because this season of the podcast is, the premise for it has been, A, bridging the gap between driving instructors and the road safety sector, but B, looking at why there's a gap there. And, you know, I've got my cynical hat on a little bit today, so I hope listeners forgive me a little bit, but I look at what you've done. So you've created this course that provides us with some free training. It also provides us with a way to take on some different work rather than just working with 17 to 21 year olds day to day. It leads to potential different work. You, as a representative of Road Safety GB, have reached out to a whole host of people. You know, you reached out to me and I shared it in my network. It's been shared thoroughly across the instructor industry. I've attended the course, so I know the emails that were sent out. I know that it was thorough and comprehensive, and I can remember reading the email saying, if you cannot make it, please let us know, you know, that kind of stuff. So from your perspective, does it deter you from doing it again?
No, I don't think so. I think, like with any project, anything that we do in life, it's about learning from that. I suppose you can use the phrase, what works well, and even better if. So let's go with the positive. Come on, take. Let's not be too downbeat about it. You know, I'm going to go with the what works well and even better if. And with any projects, I'd always do that. So, you know, can we make it better? Could we put some of the things in place? Yeah, I wouldn't want to make it onerous for people to have joined. As I say, from being positive about it, we will, I'm sure, reach that 300 point. We'll have met the grant funding criteria. We'll have 300 ADIs that have benefited from that training and have, you know, a more rounded understanding of older drivers and the things that that they have to look out for. And there are some things that will affect us all. You know, eyesight is having been on the course, eyesight is something that will affect us all, especially nighttime driving. And there's no getting away with that. And our eyesight basically changes, you know, within 10-year bands. So it would change, you know, in your 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it progressively gets harder and harder to drive at night. So no, I'm going to be positive about it. Whether we will run it again in the future. The next step for that project is that we've reached out to the ADIs that have been on the training. And what we want to do is get a list of the ADIs broken down by Road Safety GB regions, with the view that local road safety teams can then, if they're running older driver work, that they can reach out to those ADIs that have been trained. So that's kind of the next step along where we want to go. So yeah, it's good. It's good. It is positive, but so there's always things to learn.
I'm generally a positive chap. I am going to throw in the one more negative before I move on, which is quite simply that there's 41,000 driving instructors at the minute. So, you know, not for you not to be guaranteed to fill 300 spots, I find that quite disappointing in that sense. But like I said, there are lots of positives. And I found the course real positive, if I'm being honest with you. It was done over two nights, and I personally found the second night a lot more engaging, but I think that's because the first night was a bit more technical, and I kind of had a good idea of a lot of that stuff anyway. But I think the most interesting thing for me was actually just realizing the fact that we're not working with old drivers, we're working with aging drivers. So that we're not waiting until someone gets so they're really, really struggling. They're going, right, let's come in and superhero save the situation. We're getting befond, almost like we do with 17-year-olds, almost like we're going to schools and stuff like that. We try to get them before they start driving. And then we try to get the aging drivers before the problems kick in and make them aware of that problem. So is that a sort of, I'm presuming that's like a real conscious decision.
Yeah, and for the road safety teams, the local authorities that are running older driver programs, many of them either consider the state pension age, so 66, 67, or even earlier. So drivers that are in, you know, in their 60s, and they often reach out to that kind of demographic. As you say, it's about getting people to think about their driving. I mean, again, throughout your working life, you know, depending what field you're in, that every chance you're going to get some kind of training, you know, whether it's computer training or I don't know, manual handling or whatever it might be, chances are you won't have had any driver training throughout your working life. So then say you reach, suddenly you've gone from that 17, 18 year old driver and you're in your 60s and you may not have had any other driver training or any other input. So we're bound to have a few things creep in, a few little bad habits and things that we could, you know, again, let's use the phrase even better if, isn't it? What could we make better?
Well, I know that I'd been driving for 10 years when I trained to become an instructor, and I had bad habits from that 10 years. So, you know, I think, it's definitely a good thing. And like I say, I did pick up some good stuff from it. So if it comes back about, I'd recommend anyone listening to jump on board, but I know you kind of touched it then. You're going to be contacting ADIs to find out if they want to actively get involved with this in the future. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the plan is that we'll have, we'll create this section on the website that will be predominantly aimed at road safety professionals for them to be able to reach ADIs, but it'll hopefully be this network spread across the road safety GB regions. That's the plan.
Well, while we're on this topic, because we're talking a bit about driving instructors, something I've been asking most of the people that have come on the show is, why do you think there's that disconnect? Why do you think there is a gap between driving instructors and the road safety sector?
It's really interesting. I think, like any profession, you've got a raft of people, haven't you? You say it's 41,000 ADIs. So again, you'll have people that are new ADIs, people that are, been ADIs for a long time. Things change. And the thing with road safety and the road safety profession, a lot of it is built around personalities. So again, if you think about a particular area, if you're an ADI in a particular part of the country. You can go onto the Road Safety GB website, by the way, search for your particular region, and then we've got a list of the local authority road safety team. So each local authority has to have some form of road safety provision. And again, the key contact will be there. But of course, those contacts change. So again, it could be that you're an ADI and you'd used to have contact with the local authority, but again, people change, the contact gets lost. The same will be true of road safety partnerships where you've got police and fire working together. Again, those police contacts will change. You know, the fire contacts may change. And again, sometimes that just gets lost. It's about sometimes reconnecting, reestablishing those links. I think for the ADI profession, you can, you know, as a driving instructor, you can do so much. You know, you are, if you think that you're going to have, I don't know, 40 hours, 50 hours with somebody, it's a huge impact you can have on road safety. And local teams, the road safety teams, need to do more as well to reach out to ADIs. And again, if they've got campaigns that they want help with or assistance with, I'm sure there are ADIs that'd be willing to support that and get involved. So I suppose, yeah, it's a lot of these things. It's all about communication and trying to join up the dots.
We'll be back with more from James in just a moment. I want to give a quick shout out to some of the latest signups to the Instructor Podcast Premium, and they are James Wardell, Joe, Debs, and Carl Cooper Barlow. So a big thank you to those guys for signing up to the Instructor Podcast Premium. Not only are they supporting the show, but they're also getting access to over 76 hours of exclusive content, including the latest brand new weekly show over on the Instructor Podcast Premium, where we're covering some key industry topics, including the most recent episode where we spoke about the difference between safe driving for life and teaching aspects of safe driving for life. So if you would like to upgrade your CPD, you can find links to do it in the show notes to this episode, or you can head to the website www.theinstructorpodcast.com. There's a week's free trial that you can sign up for, or if you want to sign up for an annual membership, you can get a 16% discount. And once you've signed up, you get access to everything straight away. Everything we do is recorded and it's put in the vault for you guys just to jump on and listen to or watch at your leisure. But I want to take a moment to thank Bright Coaching for sponsoring Season 7. Really chuffed to have them on board, and Bright Coaching is the brainchild of Stuart Lockery. Now, you can find Stuart at various conferences and conventions and expos delivering some wonderful presentations, but he's also the deputy chair of the ADI NJC. And I think what he's doing both at the NJC and with his training and at Bright Coaching is really something pretty cool. So make sure that you are following Bright Coaching on social media and that you've signed up to their newsletter. And you can find that stuff at brightcoaching.net. And that's also where you'll find information on their professional diploma. So check out and see if they've got any spaces left. And if they do, I highly recommend you sign up. And again, that's brightcoaching.net. But for now, let's get stuck back into the show.
It's interesting that the more of these episodes are recorded, I keep going back to that word communication. But the other thing that quite a few people have said is what you've said there is reaching out locally, reaching out to local authorities. So if someone's listening and they're wanting, so an ADI is listening, they're wanting to look at, you know, where they can start. They want to get more involved in road safety, whether it's just promoting it or whether it's actively becoming part of that community. Is that what you would recommend, reaching out to that local authority?
Yeah, I would. So, I mean, if I say about Road Safety GB, so at its heart, we're a membership organisation, and we've got local authority members, police, fire, corporate members as well. But those local authorities, we've got on the Road Safety GB website, if you look for a little tag that's called Your Area, and go onto there, and depending where you are in the country, click on the region, and that'll give you the contact for your area. So again, you could just drop a friendly email and say, you know, is there anything that you can get involved with, or anything that's going on locally that you might be able to support? Most teams or have campaigns that are running, or might have resources that you might be able to tap into. You know, some teams will be able to run events. It all depends, really. Depends what's you know, how that local authority is approaching road safety in their area.
What made you get into the road safety sector, or into this area in the first place?
Well, I've been involved in road safety now for more than 20 years. So I used to work for in a road safety role for the police, and then I moved to local authority, and did a variety of different roles. And the last role for the local authority I was at was covering road safety, but also sustainable travel. So trying to encourage people to walk and cycle, and use things like the public rights of way network as well, sometimes, you know, not always taking the car, but thinking, you know, other things like park and ride, or using the buses or whatever as well. So that was the last role I did. This role with Road Safety GB was something that came about. Alan, who did the role before me, was retiring, and it just seemed a perfect fit, really, to bring that past experience that I'd got and then move across to come and join Road Safety GB and try and get involved in some of the kind of bigger aspects of road safety, some of the national aspects. We link with Department for Transport and the national road safety brand, which is called Think. People will have, you know, again, come across the Think advertising campaigns, whether it's speed campaigns, or there's been a recent one around seatbelt use, for example. So again, we've got Department for Transport and Think as our strategic partners. And we're trying to encourage people to use those national resources. Don't reinvent things. Go and use what's out there. And again, as an ADI, if you get a chance, make sure that the pupils understand about the resources that are available. So there's a whole heap of things on the Think website. You know, again, covering key aspects of road safety, as I say, whether it's seatbelt use, drink drive, speeding, things that we all know about, and we know to do the right thing. But sometimes with the Think resources, they're put across in a well-researched, but they're always put across in a well-researched, well-funded, and well-produced way. So again, you're getting resources there that are top-notch.
It's interesting you say there about ADIs making students aware of these resources. I think part of the problem is a lot of the ADIs don't know the resources are there. So it is something I'm working on, and it should be on the Instructor Podcast website, you know, potentially even by the time this episode goes out, links to all these different resources, including Road Safety GB. But there is so much out there, isn't there? You know, and in fact, let's use this opportunity to talk about Road Safety GB and what you guys offer. So just tell me a little bit about that, about what Road Safety GB does, what you stand for, and then moving on to what you offer as well.
Yeah, sure. So we're a registered charity, a membership organisation. That's essentially what we are. And we're here to help and support our members, but also to further road safety in any way that we can. So the front face of Road Safety GB, you'll perhaps put a link, but if you type Road Safety GB into a search engine, it'll pop up, and we do daily news stories. And the things you can do, and there's no cost to this, you can subscribe, you get a weekly email. So on a Monday morning, you'll get an email, and it'll be a summary, really, of last week's news. And if there are stories there that interest you, you can click back, have a look back through. The audience for this is not really the general public. It's road safety professionals and people within the road safety sector. So that's the main website. Our kind of outputs, if you like, the easiest way to describe it is through the four websites. And they're all available from the main Road Safety GB website. But the next thing, I suppose, to mention is the academy. That's where the Aging Driver course will sit. We've got a suite of courses on there. You can be an what's called an academy member, and this is kind of the cheapest route into Road Safety GB if you want to become a member. It's £55 for this financial year. But what that gets you is discounts on event and discounts on the training. So if people come forward and we're actually looking to do any of those things, looking to come to national conference, for example, or looking at some of our training, by being an academy member, you would get that discounted rate. So that's kind of website number two. Website number three is called the Knowledge Centre. And if you're looking for some specific road safety information or some research papers, then the Knowledge Centre is the place to go. It's free. You can access this. Think of it like an online lending library, really. So there'll be a whole heap of stuff in there that you're not interested in, just like in your own local library, but there'll be that little nugget, that little piece of information, that research document that you want and you want access to. You know, it could be that you want to explore, you know, in much more detail stuff about young drivers and get some of the background to that. So that's the Knowledge Centre. And then the fourth website is the one for our National Road Safety Conference. So this is the biggest road safety gathering in the UK, and plans are coming together for November. So we're coming to the Hilton Birmingham Metropole, and that's the 5th and 6th of November. And we typically, over a couple of days, we have about 60 presentations. Some of them are 5 minute. So it's kind of your toolbox talk, 5 minute quick blast on a particular subject. Others are more involved. We run two stages, main stage, and then a fringe room as well, with about room for about 50 in the fringe, 50 to 60 people. Main stage is 300, 350, something like that. Do an overnight with a conference dinner, and we do some optional workshops as well at the end. And running alongside that as well, we have an exhibition space. There's about space this year for about 25 to 30 exhibitors. So again, we'll have a broad range of people choosing to exhibit with us. And it's fantastic, really, bringing all of those folk together, all of those networking opportunities.
Just regarding the conference for a minute, and I'm sure you'll be biased, but is the Road Safety GB conference the biggest and the best road safety conference around?
Yes. it is the best conference. As far as dedicated road safety, it's definitely the biggest, yeah. I mean, again, there'll be specialist events, and there are ADI events, for example, but solely road safety across that broad spectrum. Again, ours is the largest event. There are highways shows and technology shows, that kind of thing. The beauty of it really is that we've been running, this will be the 14th or 15th year. Having had that experience and building back on having run the event for a long time, we kind of know what works, and we build on it each year. So we try and learn from what's gone before and try and make the event even better in the year to come. I'm really proud of it. I'm proud that we can put that on, and I'm proud that people do still want to come and be part of it.
I mean, look, I'll be very honest here in that I'm guilty of getting overexcited sometimes. And when I first started sort of looking more into the road safety sector, I immediately started banging my drum and saying that all ADIs should be attending these the road safety conferences and this kind of stuff. And I hold my hands up and I say, I think I'm a little bit wrong with that now, in the sense of these things, I mean, this all due respect, they're not cheap. You know, for an ADI, the you pay for the tickets, you pay for time off work. If you're traveling, you've obviously got to pay to travel and for accommodation. And when I look at what a driving instructor does, if they could afford to go to one event a year, it's probably going to be a driving instructor event as opposed to this. But would a driving instructor gain from coming to these events? So if they were in a capacity to come to this conference, be it the only one or be it one of several what they attend that year, are they going to gain from attending this?
Yeah, I mean, there's normally a broad spectrum. With the national conference, what you can do is choose to come as a day delegate. So you could look at the agenda. Agenda hasn't been quite finalised as yet. Be pulling that together in the coming months. But again, you could think to yourself, well, actually, one of those days, there are things on there that I really want to go and have a listen to. So again, you could as a slightly better option price wise is to come as a day delegate and join us for one of the days. But no, I mean, I understand that, and it's about finding what's right for the ADI. So no, that there are a range of things out there. There are things though that I've got to mention things that ADIs can do. And it'd be great if, you know, at no cost, come and have a look at the Road Safety GB website. One of the banners that we've got on the top of the website is for some resources that's called DriveFit. And if people haven't heard of DriveFit or seen DriveFit, it's an award-winning suite of videos what I'd encourage is for ADIs to have a view of those videos. And some of them are broken down. There's either a 40-minute complete video, or they're broken down into little chunks covering different topics. So whether it's a topic of sleep and fatigue, for example, there's a 5-minute little section there. And again, all those videos are hosted from the main Road Safety GB website. Click on the banner and then it'll take you through to those. It's horses for courses, isn't it? And it's finding, we know not everybody will be in that position to come and stay with us for a couple of days at national conference, but there are other ways you can interact and engage with us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intending to attend next year. I don't think I can do it this year, unfortunately. I'm intending to attend next year, but I'm really pleased you mentioned DriveFit there, because we did have Dr. Elizabeth Box on the show last year, I think, talking about that. And it's something now, that's a resource I send to students and where I can, parents as well. And I'm just a big believer that if I send it, I can't force them to watch the video, but there'll be some that watch it. And out of those some that watch it, some will take from it. And, you know, it might impact one person. So yeah, highly recommend anyone listening, go and check those out. But also, you mentioned the academy before, and this is something instructors can get involved in, because when I finish this season of the podcast, I'm taking a few weeks off and I'm going to be looking for some fresh EPD, and the academy is somewhere that's going to be on my list, because I was looking at some of the trainings on there the other day, and some fascinating trainings on there, and they're not all too long. You know, I think sometimes we can get a bit bogged down with, right, we need to go to the biggest and best course in the world. And yes, there will be options for that there, but some of them are quite simple and quite what we need and to the point. So yeah, do you think an academy is a good place to start as well?
Definitely. Again, I encourage people to have a look. So some of the most popular courses are things like behavioral change. We do a course on designing effective messaging. So if you were in a local authority, for example, and you were thinking about how best to engage with the public, how best to communicate, a course like that is brilliant. But we also run media training courses, for example. So as a course about traditional media, but also the social media aspect. We run courses on statistics, courses on road safety evaluation. So there'll be a breadth of things. Not all of them, I say, are going to be necessarily, what floats the boat of an ADI, but there'll be some things there that definitely are. So, it's a chance to have a look at that, have a look through, see if there is anything. So yeah, I might see you on another course then, Terry.
I think I need all the ones you've mentioned there. I'm not great at reading statistics. I mean, look, just to recap what you said as well, you did mention about the newsletter that we can sign up to free as well. So all the links for this stuff will be in the show notes for people. They'll be in the accompanying email on the website and that kind of stuff. So there's a whole kind of myriad of things that people can get entrenched into. But I want to ask you a little bit more about Road Safety GB. What projects are they working on at the minute? Is there anything in the pipeline, anything coming up?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a number of projects that are kind of ongoing. So on my desk, it's kind of a bit of like having a project plan really to oversee a number of things. So some projects we're moving nicely along with. So we've got the aging driver project. We're doing some work with another organisation to find out more about safe systems and what's happening with local authorities and how they're approaching safe systems in terms of their actual delivery on the ground. Again, a lot of it for me comes back to communication and trying for us not to be so siloed that we're not talking to others and what we're trying to communicate effectively in terms of reaching out to others. Say, for example, if we're doing lots of work on educating road users, but we're less skilled in vehicle technology, it's understanding that. So we've got quite a lot of projects that are ongoing, and we've got some new projects that we're hoping to secure funding for. We've got obviously the events and conferences that will be running, and I suppose as an organisation for us, it's about taking people with us. And some of the big stories that are in the news at the moment, things like graduated driving licensing, we'll be watching carefully, obviously, what happens in terms of the election and seeing how politicians want to move forward with road safety. So again, as you know, there's big things there. We've got micro mobility, for example, so e-scooters. That's another big issue in terms of our members and for road safety.
Quite a few of the guests I've had on, we've dipped this toe slightly, ever slightly, into the political waters, and I think I need to ask this question. And I'll understand completely if you don't want to answer it. Do we need a change of government to make a significant impact, for example, with graduated driver licenses, considering the fact that this government looks to be embracing the whole concept of a war on motorists and that kind of stigma that's going around? Do we need a change of government to actually make a change in road safety?
I think with the year that we've got ahead, it's down for the public, obviously, to decide which box they're going to tick or put a cross in, as far as choosing their politician. I think in terms of road safety, the next big thing has got to be about pulling the big organisations together. What big change can we make? And of course, a lot of those big decisions are political. They need the politicians to buy into it. I suppose, all told, you need the public to buy into big change as well. And the best kinds of road safety have always been where the public have got it and they've bought into it and they understand it. And it's essential that you do that to have the impact. So, you know, I don't know, say if we think about seatbelts, the way that that's been so successful, it's been such a long time. But if you think about it, it's been, you know, the development of it. So the vehicle manufacturers actually putting that in place. But then lots of education, lots of publicity, then lots of enforcement coupled with that, and the public have got it and they've understood it. And of course, you know, seatbelt wearing rates are high, but we've still got work to do to educate some people about that. But it's definitely, in terms of politics, you need that political support, but also you need the public buy-in to be able to move those big things forward. So I don't know if I've answered the question, Terry, or not.
You have answered it in a way. I won't push you anymore on it, but what I will say is that you mentioned seatbelts. I know that there was a lot of people against seatbelts, you know, when that campaign for seatbelts first came in. And maybe I need to do an episode on this at some point, actually, looking back at some of the changes, because there were campaigns saying this was taking away freedom, it was more dangerous to wear seatbelts and all this kind of stuff. And I look at the current climate and, like you said, about getting the public on board. Well, if you've got a government or a politic arena that is giving out different information, i.e. when they're campaigning for graduated driving licenses and the response from the government is the number of young road users dying on roads is reducing, and that's their reason not to do graduated driving licenses, I don't think it's ever going to come on board. But I'm not going to push you anymore on that. It might be a little bit unfair of me. But I do want to ask you, as someone that's been in the road safety sector for, I should say, sort of 20-plus years, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges we're facing currently?
Well, I think in terms of, say if we think about this audience and we think about vehicles, I think some of the challenges there are the technology and people understanding the safety aspects of what a vehicle can now do, and understanding how the safety tech works. And people, I hear it quite often, people saying that they're switching some of the safety kit off because it's irritating or annoying or isn't working properly. You know, whether that's stuff like lane keep assist or that type of thing. So definitely got a challenge with that. And it's about, again, that education, making sure that people do understand it. And use it, and also, of course, making sure that technology does work correctly and is intuitive to use and is right for us to use. So there's all of that side. You know, e-call, for example, is another thing that sometimes comes up, where again you might get a vehicle and sometimes the salespeople will tell you never to press the button. But actually, with eCall, what we do want is people to be using that, but obviously using it in a right way when they need to. So there's that side. There's the micro mobility side. So again, things are moving at some pace, but we need the government to make a decision on what's going to happen with private e-scooters. So again, listeners will be aware that. You're not allowed to use a private e-scooter on the highway, but there are those trial schemes where you can legally use the trial scooters. And then I suppose coupled with that, it's how organisations work together in as an effective way as possible. So we are trying to reduce that duplication, trying to pull people together. You say road safety is there's a lot of people involved in it, but actually it's quite a niche area as well. So it's trying to with limited funding, really. So it's about trying to pull those resources and work as effectively as possible.
And I think you've touched it there, but the biggest way to deal with those issues that you've raised is education, awareness, and communication.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of things that we can all do. So whether it's, you know, ourselves, obviously ADIs with the people that they're interacting with, the learners that they're teaching, but also just if we're a regular driver, you know, the skills and knowledge that we have, we can pass on to others. We can all try and be courteous on the road, can't we? We can always all try and respect other people. You know, and remember that we are, again, some of us will be cyclists, car riders and motorcyclists, you know, we're multi users of the of the highway. So again, it's just having that respect for others.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you today, James, picking your brains about Road Safety GB and everything else. Is there anything else you want to get across before I wrap up today?
We covered a lot, Terry, haven't we? I reckon, yeah, probably rabbited on a bit too much, really. So maybe you edit it down and be too long for you.
I recorded with Ian Edwards recently. There's a difference in rabbiting. I hope you don't listen to that. Big thank you for joining me today then. It's been really interesting. I really enjoyed it. I will get all those links in the show notes, but is there anywhere you want to send anywhere in particular?
The best bet is Road Safety GB. So, again, from there, they can then find the other websites. But I'll send you the list, Terry, of the four websites, and then people can, have a look around.
No, that's great then, James. And really appreciate you coming on today. Really enjoyable podcast. And thank you for your time. It's very much appreciated.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great. Thank you.
So big thank you to James for joining me on today's show. Really interesting talking to him and picking his brains and hearing the thoughts of someone that's been in the industry for sort of 20 plus years. And holds this role within Road Safety GB as well. Now, I feel like at this point, I want to mention that one of the things I get a lot of criticism for is sometimes being too positive, looking on the bright side, being too forgiving, and occasionally being a bit naive. But on this episode, I couldn't help but feel a bit disillusioned. I think this was the one I felt disheartened by when talking to James about the take-up from instructors of this aging drivers course. Not only the take-up, but the fact that many ADIs were signing up to do it simply because it was free and then not bothering to turn up. Now, James was being quite positive about this, and he was looking at the idea that, well, at least we filled the spots and, there's definitely an interest from ADIs, and he appreciates that, some people will get poorly or whatever and can't attend, But for me, I can't but think, first of all, as I said on the show, look at how we would feel or how we do feel when a student no-shows a lesson. That's what we've done as instructors. Now, not all of us, obviously, but that's what instructors have done. And I just found this quite disheartening that there's a lot of instructors out there that have seen this course and gone, oh, that's free, I'll go and do that, and then gone, oh, it's a bit of work, can't bother doing the work, right, I'm done. This is the first time, I think, during this entire season when I felt a bit disillusioned and disheartened. But I will continue because I still think there's an awful lot of good stuff. One of the great things about this season, I'm getting messages and comments from people that are just saying, look, I'm doing this stuff now. I've not thought about this before and I'm getting involved and I'm doing this, which is brilliant. And speaking of getting involved, kicking off on the 13th of March is the Brake Challenge, where you can raise money for BRIC. Now, I appreciate it's a little bit late for maybe for people to actually commit and go and raise money for BRIC, although you still can. You can go and spend a day walking and raising money for BRIC, or you can donate. So the wonderful Les Hopkinson has set up a scheme for driving instructors where we're aiming to walk 5 miles a day to raise money. There is a link to donate, so if you want to take part, you can message me or Les, and if you can't do the full week, maybe you can do a chunk of miles on a certain day. But you could message me or Les Hopkinson to find out more, or if you'd like to donate, you'll find the link in the show notes or in the accompanying email or even in the WhatsApp page for the Instructor podcast. So please go and donate for this. It would be lovely to see how much money we as a collective of driving instructors can raise for BRIC. So yeah, go and take a look at that. You can find all the links and details for this in the show notes, like I said, or on the accompanying email. And if you want to find out how to sign up for the Instructor Podcast email newsletter, head over to the website www.theinstructorpodcast.com. Over there, you'll find links to sign up to email, you'll find for the WhatsApp page. You'll find all the stuff for all the other content we do, including the Instructor Podcast Premium, which still has a 1 week free trial. So why not go and sign up for a week? We'll also take this point to mention there is a 16% discount on annual membership. So sign up for a week's free trial if you like it. Sign up monthly. If in a couple of months' time you're still enjoying it and you still think, yep, I want to commit, but I want to save some more money, sign up for a year. and then you get a nice 16% discount as well. There's a whole host of content over there at the minute, and it's growing literally every week at the minute, because we've started a new show recently called The Instructor Unplugged, which is going out weekly on Tuesdays, covering all the latest news and things that are on my mind, basically, in the industry. So loads of cool stuff going over there. But I also want to take a moment again, shout out Bright Coaching, who are running an accredited qualification in coaching, behavioral change, and driver psychology. It's a four-module qualification that's aimed at progressive and forward-thinking trainers keen to develop their skills beyond Part 3 and standards check tests. To find out more about what Bright Coaching have to offer, head over to brightcoaching.net and please take a moment to sign up to their newsletter, where you'll keep updated with all the stuff they have coming up. And if you haven't guessed already, I'm a big fan of Bright Coaching and Stuart Locker in particular and what they have to offer. So yeah, definitely take a moment to check them out. That's brightcoaching.net. But for now, let's just keep raising standards.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook. Talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
If you're ever worried about posting something on social media because of the response you might get, just take a moment to remember that someone once went nuts on me on social media because I had the audacity to use the word awesome. Social media makes people do daft things. Don't worry about it.